Ladies and gentlemen, this is the California Chapter Library Users of America. Welcome to our meeting, and we are recording this meeting for posterity and for the listening public. And so today I want to go around the room to see who's with us, and we'll also talk about who joins us as the day goes on. So let me start, and I'm going to pass the microphone at this table around to my left to Pam.
I'm Pam Metz, board member.
Ooh, sexy phone, sexy mic.
Brian Charlson, President, Library Users of America from Watertown, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of titles.
Debbie Berry, I just walked in, recording secretary of Kahlua.
Keep passing it to your...
Here, let me reach.
No, Linda took the puppy out.
She took the puppy.
The problem is it's coming.
And it's
the ventriloquism mic here.
There we go. Susan Glass. Oh, sorry. Susan Glass, Silicon Valley chapter.
Hello, everyone. This is Kim Charlson from Watertown, Massachusetts, and I'm president of the American Council of the Blind, and very happy to be here.
And
I'm the director. Judy says I'm wearing my librarian hat today because I'm the director of the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library, which is the NLS network library for Massachusetts. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit later about some of the unique things that the Perkins Library does for its borrowers.
And, treasurer has just walked in, so we'll pass the mic to her. Brian, passed you.
Yeah, there's some other.
You're seated. Here's microphone.
Just introduce.
Hi, this is Vita Zavoli, Kahlua treasurer.
Okay, the mic needs to go to another table. Do we have anybody who can run it over there?
Hand it to me. I'll step across.
Oh, thank you.
Say something to
the
table,
too.
Yeah.
Some of these chairs are in rather odd positions to the table associated.
Yes, they are.
Send it to my friend.
Gloria Broderick, Pasadena, California.
Here you are.
To you very well. Put your hand up.
Trina.
It's kind of wet.
Trina.
It's Katrina okay? McCurdy.
Would you like the mic, Trina?
We need to hear your voice.
Yeah, let's see if I can. I've got a problem here. I'm trying to get myself situated.
She's trying to get herself in
practice.
Okay, here I am. I'm Katrina McCurdy. I'm a member of the Braille of the
Kahlua.
What do they call that chapter? Bayview chapter. I live in Newark, California. Here's Sam Doherty.
Who's next?
This is Sam Doherty from beautiful, lovely San Francisco, California, and I'm a member of BRLC, or sort of. Not paid up. Who's next? Empty chair.
Is there anybody else at your table?
Diane Harms from San Jose, California.
Steve Mendelson, San Leandro.
Good morning, everybody. Phil Obregon from Diamond Bar.
Marlene O'Neill, BRLC.
Okay, is there anybody else at this table? Just us. This table back here. Who gets the mic? Here, let's see. Got it? Okay, thank you.
I'm John Glass from Saratoga.
Steve Bauer from Culver City, member of the Greater LA Chapter, and I am Braille instructor at Braille Institute's Orange County Center.
We're working without a mic runner, so all of us blind folks are doing real well.
Okay. Alan Ramos, Ontario, California.
Rob Turner, Sunnyvale.
Let's see, let me get the mic. Is anybody else at this table? No.
Is that it for now, Rob?
At this table, yes.
Anyone else in the room who hasn't had a chance?
I haven't.
And me either.
Say who you are, me.
Me, Linda Porel, San Francisco chapter, wearer of many hats.
And
Michael?
Somebody give it to
Michael. Hi, I'm Mike Keithley from Mountain View, SVCB and BRLC.
Is that it for the moment? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Judy, shall I just keep this mic for running time? Okay.
I have 11, including myself, 12 members present. Oh, I've got to get a mic. 12 members present. We have a quorum. I just realized it's difficult to hold a mic and get to the top of my Braille notes. So hold my mic for me, my dear. Pam is going to be my mic holder. There. If you can hold that. Now, we need to adopt the next. We're going to sort of loosely follow. You know how I am. I sometimes deviate a bit. We're going to loosely follow the agenda that I sent out. That I sent out a couple of weeks ago. Actually, Debbie got these minutes out like 24 hours after our telephone meeting, April 24th. And I resent them. Unless I hear a strong request, I'm just going to ask if we can have a motion to adopt the minutes as they were sent to the list. We got 86 motions to that effect, 32 seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Nobody gets to abstain. Right, because you weren't there. Right, I understand. That's great. That's right. Now, this is so wonderful because not having to refer back to the minutes, you know, when you look at your previous minutes, it's really embarrassing sometimes. Like, oh, my gosh, I forgot to do that. Oh, I didn't do that either. Oh, my goodness, that committee, and so forth. But the next person to report is truly prepared. All the time, and I can't say enough about how thrilled we are to have Vita Zavali as our treasurer. So it's time for Vita to give her report. I didn't give you enough notice, did I, Vita? Sorry.
I have it in my hand.
Okay.
I just need a mic.
I think I'm closer.
Oh. Well, wait a minute. Now both of us pulled it back.
Right. Nine people.
Oh, boy. Okay, Treasurer's Report, California Chapter Library Users of America, California Council of the Blind. Period covered is April 26th through September 27, 2015. Opening balance is $1,251.09. Deposits, CLUA dues for two members at $20 each, equaling $40. Raffle sales, $537, and we're nowhere near finished. And so our total deposits, $577. Expenses, Bank of America fees is $48. Total expenses, $48. Closing balance, $1,780.09. Respectfully submitted by Vita Zavali, Treasurer. Can I explain about the bank fees?
Would you? Yes.
Yes. Okay. We originally had our account in Bank of America, which was charging us $16 a month, which was extremely surprising to me when I took over as treasurer. So we have now moved it to U.S. Bank that does not charge us any fees. Anything else I need to explain?
Yes, say something about our Braille rosters, since you've got the
mic. Oh, yes. We brought 15 Braille rosters. So if you're interested in a Braille member list, Judy has them now.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
I need it.
Coming back. Got it.
Next is, I do want to report on the... Oh, thank you. We need to accept the treasurer's report. Do I have... Susan moved.
Second.
Steve seconded. Pam seconded. Everybody seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Okay. Thank you. We now have elections. So I'm going to hand the mic to Pam for her report.
Now, hello, you guys. Now, there were two members on the nominating committee, Bonnie, Rennie, and myself. We decided that we will allow Judy to run for president, Debbie to run for secretary, and what was the other one? Oh, Connie get Bateman for the board seat. And that is my report.
You actually have to do treasurer. And treasurer.
Oh, and treasurer.
Yes.
Oh.
I added that.
Yeah, we did. And treasurer. When did you slip that in there?
Vita.
Okay.
Vita, of course, did I notice? No. Vita noticed.
Okay. So treasurer. So we are going. That is our slate. And Bonnie took me, and Bonnie had a good time telling them they were running again.
Thank you. I'll take it. Seriously, since the board appointed Vita, midterm, we need to elect her, and then her term will be up again next year. So literally, in we will have to vote again.
Are there any other nominations?
We have to. See, now, Vita always tells me, like, she said, you aren't running this meeting, Judy. And now she's giving me a little, my own back. For the moment, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Vice President Susan Glass.
All right. The name of Judy Wilkinson has been put forward by our nominating committee to run for president of Kahlua. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Are there any other nominations from the floor? And one third time, are there any nominations from the floor?
Move that nominations be closed.
Here's the mic.
Sorry. Move that nominations be closed and Judy be elected by acclamation.
We need a second?
I think we need a second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Do we do an all in favor? Can we? Okay, all in favor.
Aye.
Opposed. Abstain.
Carly said no.
Only the dogs abstain, so we're okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm starting my third term, and according to some revisions in our Constitution, it could be said that I was just starting my first term, but that's coming up at a point down the line. In the meantime, we have the pleasure of having the name of Debbie Barry submitted for secretary. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations?
I move that nominations.
Susan moves nominations be closed. Pam
seconds,
Vita seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain.
Thank you.
And, and Debbie is also the host of our now, for 6 or 7 sessions now, Kahlua Book Club. So we will talk more about that at some point too. Next, we have Connie. who has the board position. Connie has made it very clear that she cannot attend the conventions that are held in Southern California, but that she would very much like to serve. And I guess that's sort of out of order. But I, that's why she's not here, is really what I'm saying. So, any other nominations? Any other nominations? Any other nominations? Somebody move. Pam moves.
Seconds.
Susan and a couple of others. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. Okay. Pam, could you hold this 1 second again for me while I look at my notes? Treasurer. The name of Vita Zavoli has been placed in nomination for treasurer. Let's find somebody to run against her. So, any other nominations for Floria? The nominations for Floria, and the nominations for floor.
Hearing none.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Don't you dare. Abstain. Okay, great, Vita. Thank you so much.
Why opposed?
Too late. I'm looking at my agenda, and raffle update. Oh, my goodness. I cannot tell you how many members have stepped up. Quite frankly, most of them have just bit the bullet and written the check. But, you know, I don't care how the money gets in the account. But I think above that 537 that we reported, I was able to, we got some at the national convention, and I've gotten to the Bayview members of our committee, but I think we've gotten 200 or 300 more, don't you think, Vita? I think that we will have a substantial amount more than that. So, and of course, as soon as we do have figures, we'll put them out, if kind of in an informal. But that has been the main effort for me in the last few months, and sort of that is the excuse I'm going to trot out when everything comes up in the rest of this meeting that Judy was supposed to do. Judy's going to sing the song of I was doing raffle. Susan and Connie are members of our fundraising committee. And Susan, so far as I know, you don't at this time have anything to report. Is that?
Nothing at the moment.
Okay. I do want to, I've got a note here. Ah, yes, Lynette was on that committee. But I will be looking to see if she feels she can still serve on that committee. She now has moved to Ashland. Ashland?
Medford.
See, it's near Ashland, and I love Ashland. So she may, you know, have changed her mind. And we, as you know, we like to keep our committees to about, you know, three, because we're a small organization and we don't really need big committees. Did I hear Steve Ford come into the room? Great. Thank you, Steve. So the next will be a brief report from the Constitution Committee. Can you get a mic back to Steve Mendelson?
Yeah, I will.
Mendelson.
Steve Mendelson.
You're on the committee and a very good member of it, too, Steve.
Steve Mendelson, where are you?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Judy. Judy is very good, as an administrator should be, in delegating responsibilities. Unfortunately, some of the people to whom she delegates them are not as effective as she is. And it appears in this case that I may be one of them. In all seriousness, I was chair of the Constitution Committee. I have excellent committee members, including Steve, who's here.
And Frank.
And of course, yes, and Frank, who I believe is not here, but equally effective. And we were supposed to have a draft for you well in time for this meeting, and would have, but frankly, without making undue excuses, I had a tragedy in my family. My brother passed away suddenly several weeks ago, and it sort of prevented me from following through on some of the things I should have done. We will get the Constitution to you, certainly, at an appropriate time, but the one possible silver lining of this is that I can tell you some of the issues that we were wrestling with and maybe give you some opportunity formally or better yet informally to voice your opinions on how some of them should be dealt with. So I'll just mention some of the issues that we were considering. First of all, apropos the question of terms, who's in what term and when the clock starts and so forth, we had pretty well decided, or I was recommending anyway, and I think we had pretty well decided, Steve, correct me if you have a different sense of it, but we had pretty well decided that people elected now would, for purposes of the new Constitution, when it comes into effect, be considered to be in their first term, no matter when they may have been elected under the old Constitution. So again, if you're all in agreement with that, we'll go along with that. The second problem we were dealing with of a major structural nature was a very broad-based problem. That's a problem exemplified by the situation that Judy just noted with regard to your board member, our board member, Connie Bateman. It's a problem of people who make a real contribution to the organization and who want to serve it and be active in it in various ways, but who can't necessarily come to meetings in places that are remote from their homes. And as we get older, many of us, and frankly some of us probably get poorer and are physically less able to travel, and travel becomes more arduous, as it seems to be doing, that kind of a situation is going to arise more and more frequently. And it gives rise to a broader question, is how you run an organization which was designed based on a annual meeting model in an era when people came together, almost everyone who was a member did come together, and in a group in person made the key decisions. That's not going to be so much the case anymore. First of all, obviously now we have only one annual meeting a year and fewer meetings. But I think in general we all know that the traditional organizational convention for our organization and for other organizations, as we've grown up knowing it, is rapidly becoming a thing of the past. So we want to try to write a constitution for Kahlua which will adapt to that change, which will somehow take cognizance of the fact that we may soon be able to and want to perhaps vote in some way other than in person, perhaps by phone, perhaps by online, something of that sort. We don't necessarily endorse or foreclose any options at this point. We know the world is changing. And so that's
getting the hook, Steve.
Do you want comments?
Not at the minute. But we do want... we're going to, of course, that's why we're going to put the Constitution on the list, and people will have chances, and then to read and comment, and then, of course, we'll have a formal meeting. We will be voting on our updated Constitution at our spring meeting, which will be at this convention, April 11th, unless we decide, I think, we may decide to hold a special telephonic Constitution meeting so that everybody in the state can participate. I'm leaning in that direction. I'll talk to the board about that, but I'm thinking that's what we might do.
Right.
Steve, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we're moving along.
Okay, and I'll just leave the other issues then for our subsequent meetings, but all your input will be welcome. Thank you.
Okay, this is where I really get to be embarrassed, because I'm the one who raised this whole issue about donated items and donated items project, you know, because I had these devices that I wanted to go to Good Homes. And the last minute said we were going to use the questions that Vita and Connie so carefully designed, and we were going to put them on lists and get it all done by May 30th. Well, guess what, folks? And there's a subcommittee of Mike and Pam and Connie and Linda that we're going to deal with this. That ball has totally been dropped, and it will be taken up again. And because the equipment is still there, and there may even be an added iPhone in there by the time I get going, because I got one that I traded in and decided wasn't worth selling. But anyway, and another project that I was responsible for, I'll just get that this one stated now. I wanted to hold a workshop on how we could become more incorporated into our local libraries. And Nolan Crabb had said he would be glad to chair that, but I'll tell you, getting Nolan Crabb to pin him down has been quite difficult. So it will happen. He has agreed that he will do it, and I'm going to put our president on the spot and ask if he'll join in that workshop too. And I have a couple of librarians lined up who will. That will happen early, you know, sometime early in the next year, that we will have this workshop on how we can all become better involved in our local libraries. So that right now is where we are with that. And I have been asked by Rob Turner if he can make an important book share announcement. So, Rob, you're up next.
It's coming. Oh, maybe I should just not sit down.
I have a question.
During lunch. Rob? Okay.
Okay, thanks, Linda. We are looking for beta testers. Oh, good. But it's for, no, maybe, well, it's for our Unified English Braille translation. And so we ask that you know the rules, the UEB rules, that you're comfortable with them. You don't have to be an expert or anything, but just know the basics. And we're just looking for feedback. So please, if you can participate, send an email to beta, B-E-T-A, at bookshare.org. And just include your contact information and that you're willing to beta test the Unified English Braille output for us. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. We have reached the point where we are going to take a brief break, about 10 minutes, so that you can, if you choose, pay your 2016 Kahlua dues to our treasurer, Vita. She is up here. Say where you are, Vita, so people...
I am right here.
Maybe you should people are sitting with their dogs comfortable. Would you mind circulating and seeing who would like to...
Judy?
Yes, Linda.
Could I also make an announcement before we go ahead to...
Yes, yes. Okay. We're not finished by any stretch.
Okay.
You can make an announcement.
Okay. Frank brought from the Lighthouse a whole stack of pamphlets that have the UEB code in them, and they are free to be handed out. We gave some out at BRLC. We have lots more. He particularly asked me to make sure that Kim and Brian got them. But also, anybody in this room who'd like a UEB pamphlet so that they can familiarize themselves and be ready to be one of Rob's beta testers, that would be good.
I am telling you we are only going to take a very few minutes because we do, you know, hope that people, rather than waiting for the mailing, will go ahead and get their 2016... Yeah, Debbie,
sorry,
yes?
It's important to say that they were prepared by the Lighthouse for the Blind San Francisco. Yeah, it is from them.
Vita has said that we need to say they were prepared by the San Francisco Lighthouse.
It's their credit. Everybody has to have their credit.
Debbie has a question.
I want to know if anyone is available here to actually write checks for us.
I don't think there's anyone in the room who can do that.
So we'll have to pay
someone,
in cash.
Someone at registration could do it, too.
I don't really want to go to registration.
Oh. Okay.
This year is hard enough for me to find my way here.
Well, just a brief break, and then we'll... I saved the main attraction for after the break, so if you... People, we're not on break yet. We're not on break yet. Linda? we'll just take this brief break, and then the main attractions, the Watertown duo, will be talking for the most of the remainder of our meeting. So don't leave. Okay, this break is now declared over. I was also going to hustle raffle tickets, but I'm going to be up in hospitality tonight and, you know, around and about. So if you know of anybody who might want raffle tickets, remember our first prize is a Victor Reader Stream. Our second prize is $100. 50 prizes is a membership in Bookshare. And the fourth prize is some assorted Braille books. So, yeah, well, you give them away. People say, I don't need that. What did I say?
She heard sorted Braille.
Oh, sorted
Braille. Would actually be more
possible
than assorted.
Oh, the S-O-R-D-I-D ones. Oh, I love it. Okay, enough of this silliness. The drawing is at the banquet, and you don't have to be there to win, because we know where everybody lives. Okay, we are delighted to have Brian and Kim with us at this meeting, and I would really like to now invite Brian to make some remarks as the LUA president, and then we want to answer some questions. So get ready with questions for Brian, but we want to hear from the being himself. So I'm handing. Okay, are you going to grab a mic?
I'm going to take a mic from you and stand up, because this way I'm not talking to people with my back to them.
Yeah. Yes.
So I've got a question for you, Madam President. Is this, if you'll pardon the expression, in lieu of speaking at lunch or in addition?
No, I'm sorry, it's in addition to.
Thank you. Okay, so I want to be very careful to know that. I don't want to use up my material inappropriately. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's a delight to be here with you this morning. I normally take pride in wearing appropriate clothing, the right tie with the right shirt, with the right pants. But if you keep looking down, I'm wearing sneakers this morning, which don't usually go with ties. And that's because 2 weeks ago, Kim and I were at the Alabama Council of the Blind Convention in Montgomery, Alabama. Anybody here been to Alabama? All right. Nice place. Great people, all like that there. And I was having a lovely time on Friday, did a little speech, bought a little something at their auction, that kind of thing, and woke up in the middle of the night with a bad fever and chills. Aww. And by the next morning, I had a full-blown case of cellulitis.
Oh,
anybody know cellulitis? Yeah. It's a systemic infection that will find its way to some part of your body and live there for a while. So my left leg from knee to toes is swollen about twice normal size and is bright red, and, you know, I'm doing that whole antibiotics thing. Thank God for antibiotics. But I feel bad first thing in the morning, but I get better as the day goes on, and so it's not interfering with me now, except that I do kind of list to starboard just a little bit.
Great that you guys came.
Well, we look forward to this. Quite honestly, you give us an excuse.
Oh.
Because we're West Coasters by upbringing.
Yeah.
And we are going from here. This is our excuse when we get to the West Coast to go visit family. So we'll be leaving here Sunday morning to go up and see Kim's mother and sister and my brothers and sisters. So it's kind of the home tour when we come to the West Coast. So one of the things that happened to me about 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, is I was elected president of Library Users of America. Now, Kim knows that we've been very careful over the course of our 36 years of wedded life and 40-some-odd years of ACB life to try not to step on one another's toes. So while I have served on Kim's Consumer Advisory Board at the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library, we try not to serve on the same boards at the same time if we can possibly avoid it. So it was good to find a way to enjoy my library side without it interfering with this general rule in the Charleston household of a little bit of separation of church and state kind of thing. And while I was delighted to be elected, I was more excited to be able to associate with such great book lovers and believers in the value of a library system. Kim and I also talk quite a bit about how the two of us kind of bring together the two things that are happening in the world of books. That is, of course, libraries, always part of that scene, but also technology and how that's impacted the world that we call libraries. So when we get together and do talk books, it's a 50-50 mix of tech and text that make up that. I am so excited to have a chance to come and see Lua's largest chapter, Kahlua. It was my pleasure this past summer to nominate your president to serve on the Lua National Board. It was unfortunate as to what kind of forced us to make some decision at that point. Our Lua first vice president, Marcia Dresser, some of you know her, was losing to pancreatic cancer. And so while she was at the convention in Dallas, it was clearly kind of a farewell tour. And Marcia was put to rest this morning in North Reading, Massachusetts. So that ringing you heard of my iPhone was a friend calling who just stepped out of the service, her final resting service. Anyway, we're glad to have you on board, Judy. It's unfortunate we lost a friend in the process, but you heard me say it was the right time to make the transition, and you were the person to do it with us, and I appreciate your willingness to step up to do that. Libraries on the national level are a moving concern. I know we think of libraries as being local, and absolutely they are a local thing. Our poor friends in the state of Alaska, what's happening to their library, Kim? Yes. What's happening?
It's going away.
Yes. The state of Alaska will only get library services from a multi-state center.
In
Salt Lake City. So if you're an Alaskan, that's where you'll get your books. And I think that's a terrible, terrible thing to happen to any community. Every type of book, not just Braille, will be out of a multi-state center. So we have to watch out at what's going to happen. And we've seen other signs of this attempt to consolidate and get to a point where it doesn't matter where the books come from as long as you get them. Now, I use books, as probably most of you in the room do, from a variety of sources. And some of them, I've never been there. Has anybody actually... Well, I know there's at least one person who's been to BookShare's offices, right? But most of us have not, right?
No, but I'm on that side of it.
But boy, I get books from there.
Boy.
Same thing for Learning Ally. I always have to stop and start with the original name and morph it to the next name and morph it to the next name before I say their name. So there certainly are library services out there that aren't ones that we expect to be, if you will, geographically somewhere near us. But there's real value to the nearness of libraries. There's not enough of us who have taken the time to stop into our physical library for the blind or visually impaired. I know there's a drop-in center at the Perkins one, because I've been there. And I think you're expanding yours right now, are you not, Kim?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are places where that's a possibility, and not every place has that opportunity. But when it's available, it's a huge value. I have been talking to Kim quite a bit lately about this concept of the blindness community. And part of what makes a community is the ability to interact with one another. Most of our library experience that is an online experience is I don't know the other people. I don't know who else is picking out those books. I'm not bumping into them in the stacks looking for the right book. I'm not getting together with them. This is where Kahlua and Lua steps in to fill that gap, to make sure that we learn from one another as much as we go on and look at a catalog and pick some books. That's why you're here this morning, right? The value of association when it comes to something that could be as impersonal as an online catalog. I also want to let you know that we are in Lua. We're doing well financially. We have about $15,000 in our treasury. And that's as a large part due to winning the Braille Forum raffle a couple of years ago. And suddenly our treasury increased by $5,000. But what this also means is that we're looking for things that we can do with that money that would be impactful. We don't want to just spend it because we're spending it. We don't want to start to feel like, oh, we have so much money, we can stop thinking about fundraising. That's never the case with a not-for-profit. But we do want to find things to do that would be impactful with that money. We're not just trying to grow a bank account. We're trying to impact the quality and quantity of library materials. We interact as LUA with lots of different organizations. As you heard, the chair of the ACB Publicity Committee, is that what it's called? Public Relations or Publicity?
Public Relations.
Public Relations Committee, Nolan Crabb, is a big-time user of library services, and he's made a real campaign out of getting access to his public library. And I really do believe in the value of that and hope that this affiliate will take some serious time to go and make that relationship happen. You may not have read it, but about 8 years ago, a Canadian province, not too far from here, perhaps the closest one, British Columbia, they shut down their library because it was determined by those who funded it that the public library had enough audio stuff that we could probably make do with that. And if you go to your public library and ask about audio content, it's not going to be a pretty picture for the most part. Because things that go commercial, as you know, have to be so popular that they're going to make money out of the sale of them. And a library's job is not just to make books that are highly popular, but to build a collection that's diverse. So you can get that book on the history of napalm, Kim was talking to me last night. I mean, is NLS ever going to do a book?
My studio is doing
it. I mean, is I shouldn't say that. Is a commercial publisher.
I'm scratching my head going, why are we doing this? And then I said, okay, now, why did I say that? Because
exactly. We like
somebody will want to read that book. So I wrote back and I said, of course we'll do it. You know, and I'm like, oh,
exactly. So the problem with commercial audio is it has to produce the books that sell. And our library is all about collecting a broad variety of reading material that would meet the interests of, us. I think the only thing blind people have in common is this vision thing. Otherwise, we're just a cross spectrum of the general society. And so creating this subset of, oh, we'll give you only the most popular books, doesn't make it happen, does it? So we have a lot of work to do. I honestly believe there's never been a better time to be a blind person. It used to be that my books, when I was 11 years old and first blinded back in 1967, the books that I read were all hand-transcribed by lovely women who worked or were volunteers through the Red Cross. All of my textbooks when I was young. Or the Jewish Sisterhood, or those kind of things. Now, think about that. At the same time, we were reading hand-transcribed books. The world had left hand transcription behind about 2 centuries ago. So it's exciting to do that. I heard a lot of BRL California members in here, right?
Yeah.
Has it ever been easier to produce Braille? Never. Used to be hand transcribed or giant, you know, if you've ever been to APH and seen those giant Braille presses, huge things, very expensive to do anything. Now I have a Braille embosser on my desk. If I want it in hard copy Braille, I have it in hard copy Braille. And of course I have refreshable Braille devices. So things don't even have to go to hard copy for me to be able to access in that media. But all these changes in the technology and how our society looks at things are going to have an impact on us, and either we're going to react to it or we're going to be proactive about it. Either we're going to complain when a library gets shut down in Alaska, or we're going to assure that our library is strong and shutting down was never even considered. We're either going to say to publishers of textbooks that if you expect $1 of government money to ever buy one of those books, it will be available in accessible format. There's a lot of college students out there now who have taken a huge step back because their college professor says you have 12 textbooks for this one course, and we're going to have you read a chapter out of this and a section out of that, and this hasn't been published yet, but we're going to give you the manuscript. Yeah, understand? So we need to be actively engaged in what libraries mean, or we're simply going to be consumers of what little is left. So we need Kahlua, we need Lua, and I'm, again, very pleased to be able to be here with you, and I'll talk to you again during the lunch hour.
Well, you're actually going to answer questions now.
Okay, Q&A, Q&A.
So, people, any questions for Brian about anything?
Okay, I'm going to run the mic, and since I can't see hands waving in the air, you have one, Judy?
Yeah.
Oh, Pam has one, but you have a...
Okay. Brian, my question is this. I actually downloaded your discussion last when we were in Vegas the last time about the Kindle and the Kindle machine and the Kindle on the phone. What I want to know is how do I put books either on the phone into Kindle or download them into Kindle? I'm having a hard time figuring that one out.
So one of the things that I do, as you probably know, is I run a computer training center, and the word computer is a big misnomer. It's all about tech. It doesn't matter whether you want to call it a computer or a tablet or a smartphone. You know, if it's got an on-off switch and a computer chip somewhere involved, we're involved. If you're going to say, I want to be reading a Kindle book, you've really got three choices for doing that. One is that you can sit at your computer and you can put the appropriate connections on there through your web browser to access Kindle books and sit there at your computer and read. I don't see you doing that. No. It's sitting at a desk reading, just not the thing, right? Or two, you can buy a device that's specifically designed to read Kindle books. It does much more than that. It's really a tablet, the Kindle Fire HDX. Is kind of the current best case scenario associated with that. It's a touch tablet. It does require some finesse in using touch screens to do it. And by this, if you're an iPhone user, you're used to a small piece of real estate to maneuver around. Think of yourself now as an iPad user. Have all that extra real estate and things are spread all over that. So you have to learn how to get focus of the speech in that part of the screen that you want to read. And this is a little complicated. Again, if you're that kind of a person that would be comfortable with that, I like my Kindle Fire HDX. It is not my first go-to one, however. My first go-to to get Kindle books is the Kindle app on the iPhone. And the Kindle app on the iPhone is very accessible. You certainly can go in and select books and read books utilizing it. It takes maybe about 30, 45 minutes to learn to do it effectively. And the other thing that's great about the whole process is you probably would be best served to go to the Kindle store, right? Mm-hmm. Do your buying there and do your accessing through the phone, because you're really adding access to those titles from the store, and it's saved on the cloud out there, that you have the rights to those books. So if you use your Kindle account on any device, an Android phone, on a Kindle Fire HDX, on your iPhone, on your computer, you can get them on any of those once you own the rights to them. So I highly recommend the best way to get Kindle books is to go online with a computer or with your iPhone, you know, through the web browser, and buy them there and then access them through the phone. Exactly. Correct.
If you've listed it, though.
If you've listed them. You have to make the point. But again, most people have the most success at doing Kindle reading buy them online, not through the app, and then access them through the app. Okay? Any other questions?
You just call out, I'll come bring you the mic.
Or just call out your question. No question?
Goodness.
Steve? Yeah.
Right. Hold on, Steve. I'm coming.
This regrettable trend toward over-centralization and a loss of local libraries, how much of it is a function of changing in perception of the library community as a whole? How much of penurious state government, and how much of decisions that NLS and the Library of Congress and or Congress itself have made?
Again, this is going to end up being 99% opinion and 1% fact, right? Because we are talking about interacting with government, and that's pretty much what any interaction with the government is, 99% opinion. So I did get a chance to speak about accessibility to the American Library Association at their big national conference and the Public Library Association at their big national conference, and in both cases, the rooms were filled to overflowing. So people care out there. And these are not libraries for the blind people. These are public library people and university library people. Okay? They all know that this matters to them. I would say part of the driving force always is going to be dollars and cents. What's the most effective, financially viable way to provide any service, libraries included? So we have a rather complicated system here. We have federal dollars producing the books, both getting them recorded, getting them brailled, getting them mass-produced, and getting them distributed to regional libraries, where the state then picks up the nickel for the in-state distribution system, right? There's another big piece in here, free matter for the blind. So another federal agency is, in fact, doing what's called revenue foregone. They put in their budget before Congress each year how much they're not collecting for there to be a free matter for the blind service. And I don't know what you think about the boys and girls in Congress, but I don't think it's going to be very long before they start looking at those numbers and wondering whether or not there's a better way to do things. I'm going to pass this microphone to Kim for a brief moment to answer part of that question, because she just had visitors from the feds.
I had visitors this past Monday from the General Accountability Office, GAO. Well, I think it is accountability now, but I could be wrong. Government Accountability Office, there we go. So Congress has asked the GAO to kind of take a look at the NLS program. What is it doing? How does it do it? Is it doing it the most effective way possible? Are there things they should be doing, they're not doing? What are they going to do in the future? What are the trends? What do consumers want? I had a list, a page long, of all these questions that they wanted to talk to me about. And it was... We had a good time. There was a team of four people, and they came before, mid-morning, and they said, they've also been visiting other organizations. So they visited the AFB office in Washington, D.C. They went to NFB and chatted with them, and they knew that I was president of ACB, and they said, well, can we talk to you before lunch, and then can we talk to you after lunch as director of a library? So I did speak with them, and I invited two people from the Bay State Council of the Blind Board, Jim Denham and Jerry Barrier, to come and talk to them with me, because I said, I don't want to do a monologue for you. I want you to hear from other people. I want you to hear about technology. I want you to hear about how do we provide effective library services for people who are deafblind, which was Jerry's expertise. And so first I talked to them about consumers and what people are interested in, which is getting access to their books, getting access in an audio format, getting access in a braille format, and getting access in a refreshable Braille format. So you may have heard that there's been an initiative, and this is, I'm taking a tangent here, but there's been an initiative called the Transforming Braille Group, which is an international initiative. A lot of money was put into a pool by about 30 different organizations of the blind all around the world to find a developer who could make a refreshable Braille display device that could sell for under $500. So that initiative is getting close to actually showing. I think it's going to be unveiled, the prototype, in Louisville next week at the APH annual meeting. The potential of a Braille display that could sell for under $500. So that could be of huge interest to NLS, because they have been, since the Braille Summit in 2013, NLS has been looking a lot toward how can we find a Braille display that we can purchase, just like the players that they purchase. Those cost about $299 a piece. So if they could find a Braille display for under $400, you know, would they want to get that? Well, absolutely they'd like to get that and start distribution of some type of a Braille display device so that we could start distributing electronic Braille books. How we do that, that's still all up in the air, but first NLS has to change their congressional authorization mandate, because the language in the law says that NLS will distribute sound reproducers, and that's all it says they will do. So it doesn't say anything about Braille reproducers or Braille displays or anything like that. So the interpretation is that right now NLS isn't authorized to distribute a refreshable Braille display reading device. So the government affairs people at the Library of Congress are figuring out the best way to get Congress to change a couple words in the authorization language that could then give the Library of Congress the authority to do this, which would be really good if we can get Congress to do anything. So,
I'm going to leave you the mic to say what you hopefully came to say as a librarian. I sent Brian back.
Oh, good. So, all right. So, so she wants. Well, did I finish the GAO story? I guess I did.
Yeah.
Pretty much that that they're looking into all this. They're going to write a report, finish it up. In the end of November. So that'll go to NLS, and then it will also, you know, go to Congress and everything. So so you want me to talk about the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library and what we do?
And then what I'd really like to hear about is the scanning project that I keep trying to run down.
Okay. All right, so I'm gonna talk really fast because I have a lot to say when it comes to the Perkins Library.
And you have about 15 minutes.
Okay. Total. All right. Okay. So the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Libraries, I think we're the fourth largest NLS Talking Book Library. We serve about 22,000 people for the state. The Braille Institute's bigger, I think, but, you know, so I have 28 staff, 170 volunteers, and we do all the things that the NLS regional libraries would do, distribute, you know, digital talking books, support BARD, send out Braille books, sign people up for magazines of Braille and audio, and then, you know, distribute the machines, maintain the machines, make sure we know where they are, and that is kind of the that's what an NLS library does. So, you know, when I got into the field of library administration, I said, a talking book and Braille library needs to do more. It needs to be the accessible public library for people who can't read print. So it needs to do what a public library would do in response to providing services and specialized services. So, for example, the Perkins Library, we have access to a large print collection for our patrons who can benefit from that format. We have about 15,000 titles in our collection, and we're growing it all the time. We also loan audio-described DVDs. First, it was VHS, and we still have some of those VHS on the shelf, and I weed them out every now and then, and I send little messages out to leadership and other lists saying, if you want VHS, you know, let me know. Here's the list. And people are like, yay, I want them. So there's still people out there using VHS, but we're only buying the DVDs now with description, and we've got about 1,200 titles we loan. Not very many Talking Book Libraries loan audio-described DVDs. So I think that's a really good service that we provide. We have a recording studio. We produce about 125 books a year in our studio. Our titles are now being added to Bard, about 6 new titles a month, and then we add some of our retro as we have time. So you're going to see some productions of the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library coming up on Bard. We also record some magazines, and I'm very hopeful that before the end of the year, we will get approved by Quality Assurance to make Yankee Magazine available on Bard. So we've been doing it for a long time, but I wanted to get it to where it would meet all the requirements of NLS so that it could be put on Bard. So that should be coming soon. We have a Braille production department. We do maybe 20, 25 Braille books a year that we add, but we also do a lot of fee-for-service Braille for the community. We do menus, theater programs, meeting agendas, newsletters, things like that that our friends downtown Boston, National Braille Press, they're not that interested in doing 2 copies of Chuck E. Cheese's menu or whatever. You know, that's not too exciting for them. They're more like, you know, 5,000 copies or something. So we do the little jobs in the area, that theater programs and menus and things like that, as a service, because somebody needs to be able to do that in the area and make that accessible. So we have large print. Let me keep up with my list here. We have, and this is where sometimes creativity and opportunity come together. Probably about 8 years ago, we were getting phone calls from families of people who they'd purchased grandma a CCTV, and now she's gone, but the CCTV works perfectly well. Many of you may have had those kind of calls from people as well. And I kept getting them, and I always would say, of course we'll accept your donation, and then I'd find somebody and place it. Now we actually have a CCTV loan program. We've placed over 150 CCTVs. They've all been donated. Occasionally, we need to get one repaired, so, you know, we have some budget set aside for repair. But for the most part, you know, those machines, they keep going and going pretty well. And it's a first come, first serve. You get your name on the list, and you could be on the list for 2 weeks or 2 months. But usually something comes along, and people who would not be able to do this, you know, have a CCTV who could benefit from it, are getting access to that. So we have we also have a Perkins Brailler loan program. We are on the campus of the Perkins School for the Blind, and in the next building over is Howe Press, where the Braillers are manufactured, one of the places. So, you know, when somebody, again, a lot of donated Braillers come in, we get them serviced, and we loan them out for a short-term loan. Short-term in my book is like a year. So, you know, I'm not like jumping up and down saying, send it back, send it. I have like 25 of them on the shelf, so... So we do that, and then in conjunction with that program, the loan program, we also have a Braille repair program. Anyone in Massachusetts who has a personal Braille writer who needs it to be repaired can send it to the library, and we will repair it for them, and we will loan them a Brailler while their repair is being made. So, again, it was something, you know, all these Brailers sitting around doing nothing, what could we do with them? And that was what I came up with. So, we also have a program before locally produced books could go on BARD, which hasn't only been about a year now that we've been able to do that. So before that could happen, I worked with our Keystone Library Automation System, which is the vendor that many libraries around the country use, including Southern California and Sacramento, both. And there's a part of the Keystone system called SHELF, Shared Electronic Files. And it's kind of a BARD, you know, BARD Junior. It's a little more complicated, but it does serve that purpose where locally produced books are put on shelf and you can download them. You have to you have your username and password from your library, but you can go in there and there's about 5,000 books that are in shelf that you can download. And those 5,000 books are not on BARD.
One second.
Mm-hmm.
Linda?
Yeah.
Would you mind going back and just kind of, we don't want, you know, I don't want people
He's
just drifting
lunch.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you just go to the door and
be the okay. The gatekeeper?
The bouncer.
I want to quiet my friend. Those who have just come in, we're listening to Kim Charleston speak, and if you could be quiet.
All right. So, and I know you all have access to this too, I think through Sacramento. We are, in Massachusetts, we provide access to the Newsline service. So you know Newsline and 400 papers and all the things that it can do. So that's one of the, again, services that we pay for our budget in for the state of Massachusetts. I have a reference librarian on staff, just like a public library. Her job is to help people get answers to questions they need in an accessible format. So if it's not in the NLS collection, then you know, she uses the internet and database searches and gets you full text of magazines and things like that. So while you can't necessarily use Linda's services, my reference librarian, we are part of a virtual reference program called InfoEyes. So if somebody's having a, yeah. So InfoEyes is a service you all can use. It's the talking info, InfoEyes.org, InfoEyes.org. So InfoEyes is a virtual reference program that's administered by Massachusetts Talking Book Library, Perkins, Minnesota, Washington State, and Maryland. So the four states, we put in and kind of created this whole infrastructure that is InfoEyes, and we cover different days of the week. So you get probably about 12 to 15 hours of librarian coverage on InfoEyes, but mostly people go there and they send an email question. So if you had a question, you're looking for something about carpal tunnel syndrome because your doctor just told you you have it, but you don't know where to find anything. Reference librarians on InfoEyes could answer your question. They could get you some articles. They could email you those articles in a format that you can use to answer your question. So that is a service you can use right now, right today, and take full advantage of that. We at Perkins, we also have a children's librarian. She's children and youth librarian, so we participate in the state's summer reading program with it's the same theme and the same activities that public libraries use for their summer reading programs. We had 66 kids this year sign up, and they read, I don't know, it was like 15,000 minutes. They don't keep track of the books. They keep track of the minutes. The minutes broke down, and it was like 15 days of reading. So it was really exciting to see those numbers. And we had a little boy, 10 years old from Maine, was our number one reader. I mean, he read every Harry Potter book this summer. Now, that all by itself is a lot of minutes, you know. So, because the Perkins Library provides Braille services for people who live in Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., and North Carolina. So we are part of that, you know, what is centralization doing? Is it good or is it bad? Now, in the case of Alaska, it's bad because the rug got pulled out from under patrons in Alaska before they even knew it. The decision was made by bureaucrats. And, you know, the consumers didn't have a thing to say about it. It was all done before they even knew. In the case of what Perkins does, we've been providing Braille services for New England states since around 1900. So we have a pretty long history of being collaborative and supportive of the programs. I mean, it doesn't make sense that Maine would have a Braille library for 75 Braille readers, or Vermont for, you know, 52 Braille readers. So it works out really well, but, you know, another example, and again, my philosophy has always been there needs to be somebody at the home base who provides customer service. But Perkins provides all the back room services for Rhode Island. We contract with Rhode Island. They have four staff in an office in Providence. Their computer is linked to our computer. So the books they're selecting for their patrons and the machines that they're assigning to their new patrons are shipped out every day from Watertown at Perkins. And those folks in Rhode Island are getting better services than if the four people in Rhode Island were trying to do what we're doing for them. It's an economy of scale, you know, because we're sending out 2,000 to 3,000 books a day. So the 400 or 500 that go to Rhode Island aren't really that hard for us to do because I have a shipping staff of five people, and that's what they do, and a machine department. So we don't provide the customer service for Rhode Island. They still do that. But everything else, the books, the machines, the mailing, the reporting, all the stuff the librarians in Rhode Island don't want to do, we do for them. So that's an example of positive, I think, centralization and where it can really have a positive effect on things. I know I didn't get to your thing yet.
That's all right.
I will. If you have any more time, and
just
I could.
Okay,
so I will talk about what Judy wants me to talk about, which is our Boston Public Library scanning project. And I'm happy to do this with any of you who have a book. So in Boston, some of you may have heard of an organization called the Internet Archive. So the Internet Archive lives in San Francisco, actually. But it has scanning labs in about 6 or 7 major public libraries, Boston Public Library being one of them, where what they do all day, there's people who work in those scanning labs, and these are big scanners with foot pedals and buttons and glass plates that come down on the scanner. I had a chance to tour the lab, and I was like, I wonder if Bookshare has these kind of scanners or not. I mean, this is cool. But they scan books all day long. And so we have a collaboration where if somebody needs a book and we can't find it anywhere from anybody, then I look to see if that title is in the collection of the Boston Public Library. And if it is, the staff at the BPL pull the book from the shelf. This is assuming it's on the shelf and available. And they send it to the scanning lab. The scanning lab scans it. That might take 2 days to get it through the process. Then the files are sent to the Internet Archive, and they turn them into a protected DAISY format to play on a Victor Stream or some other player that can read DAISY formatted material. The markup is pretty much a page level only. It's, you know, it's not fancy markup, but it's at the page level. And the book is posted on the Internet Archive website, which is called openlibrary.org. And I would usually notify the patron, or sometimes I will actually download the book for them and then send them the book. And we have Victor Streams at our library, the first generation Victor Streams. We had about 50 or 60 of them that we loaned out to people, and everybody was saying, well, what am I going to do with these old Victor Streams? Nobody wants to use them anymore. Well, we use them for two things. One is to download an Internet Archive book, and your Victor Stream has to have a key that authorizes it to play books from the Internet Archive, just like you have to have an authorization key from Bard or... No, individuals can get the key, and you may even already have it in your stream. If you can put the file in your other books folder on a second generation Victor Stream, it should play as well. So, but we put the Internet Archive book on the old Victor Stream that's authorized and mail it out and let somebody borrow it. But we can do that via email too. So if you had a book and you've been wanting to read it and it's not accessible anywhere, and we can find it. We can find it at the BPL. We can get it scanned, and I'm happy to work with you because I like to keep them busy. I like to have them at least doing one or two titles a week just so they know that there's blind people out here who want stuff.
Give your official address.
Okay. So if you want to contact me at Perkins, my email is kim.charlson, so that's kim.charlson. @perkins.org. And you can email me the title, you know, as much information as you can tell me about the book. And then we can start the process rolling. And sometimes I go ahead and do another exhaustive title search on it just to be absolutely sure something didn't pop up while you asked for it, you know, a few months ago and it wasn't available, just to be sure before we do it. But we can do something, and I'm happy to work with you because there's a lot of books out there, and I know there's demand for them.
I'm rushing you, but we can also go to the Internet Archive. Would you just remind me?
Yes, the Internet Archive. You can go there and browse. And if you have, again, this key, and there's a way on your Victor Stream, I think you can turn it on under the info setting, and you can go through, and it should tell you that you have three keys. So when it says three keys, then I think you're pretty much set. If you have three keys on it, you've got all the keys that come with it, and that includes authorization for the Internet Archive books, the protected DAISY. So you just, if you wanted to borrow or download an Internet Archive book, you go to openlibrary.org, and you search, and you find there's a link on their site that says DAISY Protected Version. And it says under that on the webpage, you know, this is only available to authorized, you know, NLS borrowers who have the right encryption key. So,
Judy.
The staff's clamoring.
Yes, they need to feed us. Everybody's clamoring for their lunch. So thank you, everybody. And if you have questions, feel free to email me, and I'll be here for a couple days. That's what people tell me.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming. This meeting is adjourned.